I'm going to go to the team that always wins the offseason. At least we think and we talk about them. The Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears for me. I thought they had an insane draft. And not only did it start with the draft, it started with free agency. When you go out there and you get paid for, like, the highest paid center, Drew Dahlman. Okay, yeah. So your interior three of the offensive line. You trade for Joe Tooney from the Chiefs. You trade for Jonah Jackson from the Rams. And then you go out and you draft Colston Lovely. Yeah. Okay, people are like, well, they got Cole Kmet. What are we doing? Okay, have you not watched Ben Johnson's offense?
Yeah.
Ben Johnson is a 12 personnel offense. Let me break that down. One back, two tight ends. Yeah. But Ben Johnson has a clear plan. This is used and always has been a defensive franchise. Yeah. They are saying with their first three picks, because they took an offensive tackle in the second round as well, which could plug in to start.
Yeah.
This is an offensive football team.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully today. And welcome to our Chicago Sports Network audience on the simulcast. Familiar face, Ruthie Polinsky. You're on there every day at 5:30 on the Big Pro Football Show.
5:30 p.m. and a.m. today.
Yes, and we'll be there tonight. At the rate doing the show from 35th and Shields. That'll be fun.
I'm excited.
In the new studio out there. So welcome aboard. We are talking Bears. That was the voice of Chase Daniel, the career backup quarterback who made a fortune holding a clipboard. And he knows his football when he sees it. And he was weighing in on FS1's The Facility about the Bears offseason. I do think that there's so much reason for the Bears to be optimistic because we are post-draft now. But what I think he was doing was he was combining free agency with the draft and giving the Bears an overall assessment, and that optimism is understandable. The Bears are, again, in contention for the offseason championship. They have had a terrific offseason. You could make the argument that maybe there hasn't been a more improved team in the NFC, and you would be able to support that belief. The draft, though, we always want to grade it. Well, we want to grade it. You don't want to grade it, but you're going to have to grade it, or at least tell us what you think about your grades. When you look at the discussion we had earlier about starters on a potential playoff team, I came up with two. You came up with
four. Potentially.
Potential starters. That the timetable is, I think, what the word potential implies.
Right.
How long before this team becomes playoff viable, and how would you overall assess, without giving a grade, this draft class? I gave it a B-. What do you think about that grade of a B-?
Great. Cool. Let's check in 4 years. Whoop-dee-doo. B-. No, I am an anti-grade person. I know people love them. People get worked up about them. People like to B minus. B minus is like the coldest hot take because it's like average.
It is not the coldest hot take. The coldest hot take is C+.
No, the coldest hot take is not giving a grade.
That is the coldest hot take. Let's wait until 2027.
Because guess what, David?
Can be right.
Okay, I'll give a grade. All right. A+. A+. Guess what? I'm going to be wrong. You're going to be wrong. Dustin's going to be wrong. No one knows.
B- is good in spots, disappointing in others.
I think I gave a B plus on CHSN last night.
You did give a B+.
B+.
I was going to remind you of that, but I didn't want to, like, you know,
kill my vibe.
Yeah, kill your vibe there. I think it's, at least it's not worse than that. At least there have been some years where you look like, what are they thinking? What are they doing? And this year, at the top of the draft, there was so much excitement over, I think, the Colston Loveland. I shouldn't say that. I'm speaking from total personal bias there. I was excited for Colston Loveland, the Bears getting him, because not just because I predicted it, but because I do think I see ways that he fits in this offense.
Yeah.
The comparison to Sam Laporta with the numbers you presented in the first hour, that's so... That is such support of why the Ben Johnson offense is ideal for a guy like Colston Loveland, because Sam Laporta had 1,000 snaps as a rookie.
1,000 snaps as a rookie. You know what Sam Laporta also had as a rookie? Jared Goff.
10 touchdowns, though, right?
10 touchdowns.
And
I'll
catches?
Say this.
87 touchdowns?
Let me get or this 87 up for catches? You.
He was productive.
86 catches, 10 touchdowns.
And he did have Jared Goff. And he did have,
I think so much of Colston Loveland's success this season is going to be based on Caleb Williams. And that's the truth. It's Ben Johnson can only do so much. he's not out there throwing the ball, although I'm sure he would like to be.
He would like to be. And you know what? He probably believes that he could throw it as accurately as any quarterback in the league. And he has that kind of confidence, that kind of bravado. And that's very interesting. All right, back to the grades for a moment, because I want to get to your Caleb Williams point, because okay. I sense some skepticism in your tone.
Okay.
All right, NFL.com, B+. Pro Football Focus, B+. ESPN, B+. That's Mel Kiper. Oh, wow. That's a compliment.
That's high.
That's high for Mel Kiper,
yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
That's pretty high praise. Fox Sports, A-. CBS Sports, B+. Bleacher Report, A. Wow. A. The Athletic, 7th in the NFL. Dane Brugler, the author of The Beast,
yeah,
thinks the Bears were in the top 10 of the league in terms of the draft execution. That's high praise. All right, that's the Athletic. USA Today, B-, which is the coldest hot take. Sports Illustrated with the coldest hot take, a B-. Yahoo Sports, B, and The Ringer, A-. So there are no bad grades there. There are no grades where that you're afraid to, if that's on your report card, you're not ashamed to show your parents. So Ryan Poles can feel good about the consensus is that they did enough things right to feel good about the future.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Ryan Poles is looking at these grades from all these people?
Yes.
I don't think he is.
Really?
No.
I don't see Ryan Poles.
I think the scouts might be.
Do you think that Ryan Poles is oblivious to what people think about his draft class?
Not oblivious, but again, this goes back to the Brandon Bean conversation we were having. Like, you have to be confident in your decisions and you have to be convicted in your actions as the general manager of the Chicago Bears. Well, does what... maybe he looks at a few, but like, what did Dane Brugler think? You know, like, I think maybe he'll look, but just out of curiosity.
Why are you placing Dane Brugler ahead of our grades?
Well, the beast is the beast.
The beast is the beast.
The beast is the beast.
All right, that's fair enough.
I don't think he cares what Rudy Polinsky thinks or David Haw, no offense.
You think Ryan Poles does not care about what the outside opinions of his draft class are? I totally disagree with that. Do you see in Ryan Poles when he appears behind the microphone, somebody who is so confident in the job that he's doing that he projects this air of, I don't care what you think of me? I don't see that at all. I see a guy that every time he goes out, I don't know what to expect from him. I don't see somebody who oozes confidence to the point where he doesn't really care about what you think of his performance. I see that a little bit more in Ben Johnson.
I was going to say, I think this year feels different because he's so confident and comfortable with his head coaching hire. And I think Ben Johnson's influence on this draft was felt. And they truly are a team. I mean, they are doing it together. Sharing the phone calls. Cooking with hot grease.
those phone calls are just awkward. Ruthie, come on.
They're so awkward.
Those are awkward.
They're so awkward.
Note to Bears social media team. This next year, when the call is made to the young man that they're drafting, don't do the on-camera thing. It just feels awkward. And I think that we want to evaluate, and we will always evaluate Ryan Poles most by what he does in free agency and what he does in the draft and the roster he puts together, because that should be what he wants to speak for him, because the other stuff is a work in progress.
Yeah.
Not the most smooth communicator in the world.
I think there's also an element of the front office is saying, okay, we did our job. Mm-hmm. Now we hand it over to the coaches. You guys go coach them. And if it doesn't work out, we did our job. We got the players. You guys got to make them good.
Yeah, but does every coaching staff, doesn't every front office do that to some degree?
100%.
But now this is the Bears' turn, because I think that's one of those things where you look at and you think that...
Oh, boy.
I almost spilled my coffee there. That would have been quite an incident.
A day ruiner.
Wow, that would have been at least some morning ruiner. But now the Bears' coaching staff that we have heard from Eric Bieniemy, you had to sit down. We heard from Antoine Randall. It was great the way they presented the coaches to talk about these guys. Now it's their turn. Now they get a chance to mold these young rookies when the mini camp begins next week into the kind of players they can count on as early as this season. Because there's an 8-person class, at least half of them, more than half of them, I think are going to be players they have to count on next year.
Need to be like heavy contributors, right? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
The heavy contributors on special teams, or maybe as part of the game plan. The only ones I think factoring into the game plan are the first two picks, Loveland and Burden. Ozzie Trapillo, we'll wait and see what the health of Braxton Jones is and what they do with Darnell Wright. Shamar Turner will be a rotational guy in a defensive line that was supposedly comes at you in waves. Ruben Hippolyte from Maryland is all speed.
Interesting. It's an interesting pick.
Interesting is a word that I can interpret in many different ways. What do you mean by that?
Curious.
Interesting good, interesting bad.
I'm curious to see what he contributes. What's his role?
See, now
my core special teamer.
Interesting to me says should have drafted a safety. Okay. That's what I mean by interesting. I think the Hippolyte is
did they go with the best player available or the fastest player available?
Both, probably. You're right. This guy can fly.
Yeah.
As a linebacker, and he's got all the experience from Maryland, but you drafted a special teams player.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if you could have drafted there. That's where I want to have this longer conversation with a guy like Ryan Poles about drafting for need during the NFL draft rather than best player available. Because you are somebody that needs a safety, and they didn't draft one. And you needed a running back, and you waited until pick 233 to draft one. How much of that need is in your mind when you're evaluating whether to draft the best player available? You know, because sometimes your best player available is so subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Your need is not. You know what I mean? So you can evaluate players. It's all subjective about who I think based on my evaluation powers and strengths and all those things. My opinion is this guy's at the top of the board. But the reality is you need a safety. There's no ambiguity there. You need a running back. So that is less arguable than, well, is he at the top of our board? Well, not according to the other board, because all these opinions are factored together. It's a fact that you need something.
Okay.
It's an opinion that this guy is the best player available.
Okay, fair. I hear you. I think when you're the Bears and you need a lot of pieces still all over the roster, not just at safety, they need depth at linebacker.
Fair enough. They do.
They need
not as bad as they need depth at safety.
When we were talking about it yesterday, David, I was sort of like, oh, there's more options. Dave Wansett, I think, said with you guys, he said that Tyreek Stevenson may move to safety. And then we also heard from Dennis Allen, who talked about Kyler Gordon maybe playing a little safety. You have some flexibility there. And I'm just curious. I don't know. You need a depth at linebacker. That's not a need.
I agree. Okay. You're gonna miss
Sanborn.
Yeah, I think that's you shouldn't miss him that much though. If he was that important, you should have kept him. Should have tendered him a contract. But I just wait and see. I think he's gonna be Hippolyte will be a good special teams contributor. I wonder how much they'll be in the base package where he'll get a chance to play. Maybe he'll be one of the diamonds in the rough in this draft class. Let's go out to the phone lines 312-644-6767. Joe is on the road. Joe, welcome to Mullen Haw. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Hopefully you guys are good. I love the show. I think we're being a little bit, if you look at it as a former defensive back, I can tell you this draft projects to give the Bears nightmares to any defensive coordinator, because who are you going to double? Because Cole Kmet is more a possession type tight end, but this Colton is a game breaker. So, and with Luther and Rome and DJ, who are you going to take away and how are you going to double team? You're going to have to be seeing a lot of six defensive backs on the field against the Bears, which makes them, that's why I think Ben Johnson likes to run so much, because he's got the defense spread out, and it's hard to take your key receiver away and stop the run. I love this draft. Obviously, it's not perfect, and obviously, the offense all hinges on how well Caleb Williams develops and how well he's protected. thanks, and I'm interested in hearing your take on it.
Great phone call, Joe.
Great phone call, Joe. Love the vibes. Thank you for the positivity this morning.
Carl is in Antioch. Carl, welcome to Moline Haw.
Hey, guys. Good morning. So I wanted to just go real quick into the running back situation. I'll give you a grade at the end if that's what you want. But I think with the draft, I believe that going into this draft, based on who they ideally wanted, I think that they wanted a lineman, whether they wanted Membu or Banks, arguable. And I think they were eyeing Trevion Henderson. That didn't work out. And as far as giving a grade, when I look at – look, when I go to get a pizza, if I want to meet lovers and they're out, and they're out because I left a half an hour later than I should have, it's my fault because I didn't execute my plan. And these guys, based on their position, they had every chance to hold their destiny in their future. They controlled their own destiny last year, and they had the 10 pick and the 41 pick because they didn't rest Caleb Williams last year. And if they would have rested their important players last week, there's a difference between 10 and 7 and 41 and 38. If you're at 7, you can get a lineman, which is who you wanted. You had to settle for the tight end, which could be good. And if you want a Trevion, guess what? At 38, he's available. At 41, he isn't.
Thanks, Carl. Carl, I appreciate the phone call. I'm not.
Caleb Williams needed every rep he could possibly get.
And they beat the Packers
last year.
They beat the Packers.
Do you think Thomas Brown, who was auditioning to be a head coach and a coordinator all across the league, was going to throw his last game?
Do you think Seth Rollins would have put up with that?
I mean, honestly, and you think about it, like, you think DJ Moore wants to go out there and lose a game? You think he wants to say, like,
Williams is unbeaten at Lambeau. He's unbeaten at Lambeau.
Undefeated.
He beat the Packers. Yeah. That means something. That might have been the highlight of his season.
I do like the pizza reference.
Yeah.
Meat lovers. You control your own destiny to an extent. You can't ask the players and the coaches to lose games. I'm a thorough believer. And you can't throw games. What I will say this is, you control your own destiny. You could maybe try and trade up. You could, et cetera. But it takes two to tango. And if Ryan Poles felt like, I'm not giving up valuable draft capital to move up, I'm not going to do it.
847 with the text of the morning so far. That Green Bay win was better than the number 7 pick. Yes.
Love it.
I think that's true. I agree with that wholeheartedly. That was invaluable in terms of Caleb Williams' growth and what that meant to his rookie season. All right, when we come back, we will talk to Dr. Brian Cole, the surgeon who operated on Lonzo Ball and Gabriel Landeskog of the Colorado Avalanche. They were the similar surgery, and it was groundbreaking. And Brian Cole will be here to tell us all about the connection, because Landeskog is playing for the first time in 3 years in the NHL playoffs. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Those are the superheroes of the world. I mean, medicine, you know, advancing is always good, not only for athletes, but for, you know, the whole human population. So as long as that advances, I think it's nice to have guys out there like myself and, you know, the hockey player you were describing, to just show guys another option, another way, and just open doors, you know, for more people along the world.
Welcome back to the Mully and Haw Show. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. That was the voice of Lonzo Ball talking about his return from knee cartilage replacement surgery. And Lonzo Ball is in the news, or his name has been mentioned, because Gabriel Landeskog has something in common with him. Gabriel Landeskog is a Colorado Avalanche forward who scored his first goal in 1,032 days on Saturday night in Game 4 of the NHL playoffs against the Dallas Stars. And that brings us to our next guest, who joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Dr. Brian Cole is from the Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. He's a professor of sports medicine and a noted orthopedic surgeon, the team physician for the Chicago Bulls, who performed surgeries on both professional athletes. Groundbreaking stuff. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is a remarkable story in both cases. I think they marvel in Chicago when Lonzo Ball returned, and the same reaction had to be there Thursday night last week in Denver when Gabe Landeskog returned to the ice. His recovery, his path back was just nothing short of remarkable. You were there, and you obviously were here for the Lonzo Ball recovery, and you did both surgeries. How do you feel when you see the results of your work and these comebacks by these two superior athletes? What goes through your mind when you watch this unfold?
Well, it's, you know, in both instances, it was sort of a long time in coming, and there's a lot of variables that go into it in getting an individual like this back to sport. And it's, in some ways, I only play a very small part given the team approach in terms of all the others who sort of weigh in and factor in and helping to get back. But it was actually pretty amazing in both instances. And I think mainly because there's a personal connection that I've sort of acquired over the last couple of years for both of these individuals, and they're in their own unique individual way. They're pretty spectacular people, and it feels, you know, it's a very close personal thing. It's not as much a clinical outcome as much as it is seeing an individual achieve something they've been looking to for such an extended period of time, and then sort of witnessing it, and then being part of it and sharing in the joy of, you know, really getting back and being able to do it and do it successfully and do it with high athleticism. I mean, that seeing that unfold directly was nothing short of amazing for me when I think back to all the things in my own personal career, but being part of that process.
Dr. Cole, it's great to talk to you. Personally, I'm the daughter of a surgeon. I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I like to think that I have some sort of medical, you know, knowledge, more so maybe than other people who aren't related to a surgeon. But I always say to my dad, I always say, can you explain to me that surgery like I'm five? So I'm going to ask you the same thing. Can you explain this procedure? I think it's important for people to understand what exactly you do.
Yeah. So from the surgical perspective, these are individuals who have lost or have damaged cartilage. So there's, you know, sort of simplifying it, there are two kinds of cartilage in the knee. There's the articular cartilage, that's the white, shiny cartilage that provides a slippery surface that when that gets eroded or degenerates, that's what arthritis is. And that can be in a small area or a very large area. And when it goes unchecked, the only solution is replacing it with metal and plastic, a knee replacement or hip replacement or other joint. The other kind of cartilage is the meniscus cartilage, which is the soft cartilage that helps provide a cushion between the ends of the bones. And when that's missing, that in and of itself can cause pain, less common. But when it's associated with arthritis, which is loss of the other cartilage, it can cause pain and disability. So what we do is we use human tissue to replace it. So both types of tissue are available in the same individuals who donate their heart, liver, lungs. They also donate cartilage, whether it's the meniscus or the hard cartilage, and we literally replace it with someone else's tissue.
Talking with Dr. Brian Cole from the Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, the surgeon who did both surgeries on Lonzo Ball and in Gabriel Landeskog of the Colorado Avalanche, and both players returned to action after being out for, in Landeskog's case, his 3 years. It was between stints on the ice. And Brian, I just wonder if you could talk about how related and how aware was one of the other's progress, and how did that relationship develop between the two? And did you, as somebody who was maybe the go-between, use one of the athletes' example to encourage or compare to the others?
I think that they're both really heady, thoughtful individuals, and super committed. And it was not uncommon to say, "Hey, how is Gabe doing? How is Lonzo doing?" And it was also, you know, very visible in the media how guys were progressing, because there would be vignettes shared in terms of their progress. Both were pretty open about that. So I think it was useful for each of them to see their progress, and they weren't really that far off one another in the scheme of things. So, it was helpful, and I don't know if they spoke directly, but I do know that the conversation came up frequently, and even at an organizational level, because when you've got such an infrequent, uncommon occurrence, you have to borrow from something. It's not like I can tell you from experience that we've had hundreds of individuals like this. This is while the procedure itself is relatively common in active people of any level of athleticism, it's not common at this level, just because there's so many other variables that prevent it from actually, you know, potentially working. So I would say that in this instance, it was important for them to sort of have some knowledge of each other's progress.
What was it like for you to watch Lonzo meet the family of the donor?
Yeah, there's a lot of firsts, to be honest, in both these cases, and that was pretty amazing. There were so many twists and turns, and there was, like, you know, 9 degrees of separation here. When with the donor family, I had peripherally known that the father, going all the way back to 1999 of the donor,
wow.
Alex was the 20. He's a 20-year-old who had committed suicide. He was the son of an individual who I actually knew peripherally going all the way back to 1999, ironically. He too was actually a professional athlete, and I peripherally had consulted on his repair, and he actually had a cartilage transplant. Fast forward 20 years later, he ends up working in that same industry, and then we met serendipitously through this whole encounter, and the whole family came in. It was a pregame encounter, and Lonzo was incredibly gracious, as he always is. And you could just see the appreciation and the thoughtfulness on both sides, to be quite frank. And it was really to have full circle between the donor family, the individual who, you know, myself, who actually had the privilege of handling the tissue and, you know, putting it in someone's knee, and then having them meet him, and he simply basically said, look, you gave me my career back. And it was an incredibly touching moment that I think also provided a healing experience for the family. That was one of the most special things I've had in the last 25 years of my career.
You know, Brian, we in the media can be prone to hyperbole and use words like remarkable and amazing, and look at two professional athletes who were able to navigate this road back to the ice or to the basketball floor as Landis Cogg and Lonzo Ball did. And I just wonder, from your perspective, you mentioned you, and we all know you have been a familiar face and voice and around the Chicago sports scene for a very long time. How would you describe it to somebody? How rare has this been in your own career? Because you have been exposed to so many different types of recoveries and rehabilitations and surgeries. But why, if this one stands out, does it stand out?
Well, as I sort of alluded to, the procedure is, I guess, rare but not uncommon. And in terms of our world of individuals, we're looking for solutions that really previously weren't available. In other words, the use of human tissue to restore, problems that cause pain and dysfunction, right? So the challenge is, though, when you move it up the scale to an elite athlete where the physiologic loads, the loads are so intense, and both of those sports are intense. You can't take either one of those for granted in terms of what's required. You don't go into this with the expectations that it's definitely going to work. In fact, obviously, there's no guarantees in any of the things that we do. But what's unique here is that it has to have an athlete who says that if I don't do this, I otherwise can't play. This isn't for someone who says, look, you know, I'm training for a marathon. I run 3:30, but I'm trying to run 3 hours and 10 minutes, and I always get pain at 3 hours and 11 minutes, so give me new cartilage. The margin of improvements are not that granular. So you have to be in a situation where there is no other option. And, you know, what was the terminology we say, it was kind of a Hail Mary. In that respect, it's just that there's a paucity of any other solution, and the individual has sufficient pain and dysfunction, everything else has been tried to get them back. That's what this solution is. So for people to think, well, maybe this is for me, and I have bone-on-bone arthritis, and I just don't want to have a replacement, it's not likely to be a remedy for that situation. This is a very unique situation that was slotted or sort of thread the needle in terms of the ability to achieve a successful outcome. But it's not always about the surgery. It's about the sort of, as I alluded to when we started our discussion, it's about the team in place and having the sort of multidisciplinary approach to getting an athlete back, which is not something that everyone has. So there's so many variables here that relate to a successful outcome that I would not be able to say you can generalize to every individual with this type of problem. There's some things we probably haven't even identified that we just don't control. But in this instance, for the time being, we've had a very fortunate outcome for both of these gentlemen.
Is one sport harder than the other to come back to? I mean, the assumption might be some people would think, well, hockey's much harder because of the way you skate and the strain that is on the knee. But other people might say, well, hey, if you ever watch an NBA basketball game, which sport do you think is more difficult?
Yeah, again, I guess this goes, you know, I can't, this is not as linear as you might think. It depends. It's going to depend. They are both brutal sports. Mm-hmm. That much you and I know, right?
Yep.
Like they call upon different sort of degrees of athletic capability, but they're both incredibly intense and with huge physiologic loads and prolonged activity. So I would say that in Lonzo's case, you've got long, prolonged bursts, jumping, cutting, pivoting, things of that nature. In a skater, you've got a different situation with incredible athleticism where you have short stops, a lot of side to side. You're obviously not getting the jumping and so forth, but the physiologic loads are enormous. So they're both really challenging sports, which makes this remarkable, I think, even in and of itself. But it probably depends on the individual as well.
We've got a minute left, Brian. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think is important to know as you discuss and look back at the work that you've done and the paths that they have followed to get back onto the court in Lonzo Ball's case and the ice in Gabe Landeskog's case?
Yeah, no, I would just say in this instance, I feel really privileged to be part of it, but it wasn't just me. As I mentioned, there's a lot of people involved in making this happen. And tissue donation is a space that people are not that familiar with, and it speaks to how important it is. People are knowledgeable about heart, liver, lungs, and things of that nature, but the gift of life also is a gift of hope for people like this to give something to them that they otherwise couldn't get. And from my perspective, I would say that because I had so much constant contact with both individuals, one of the greatest privileges was really getting to know these people during the recovery process. And what I learned, I would be able to generalize, and I can generalize, to just everyday people like you and me who just don't want to have pain and want to get back to sports and just be active. So this is, you know, for me, I feel very, very fortunate to have played a part of the process. But, you know, honestly, never take any of this for granted. There's a little bit of luck, and there's a lot of things we don't control that lead to these kinds of outcomes.
Thanks so much for your time and sharing the story.
Thank you, Dr. Cole.
Have a great day.
Dr. Brian Cole from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, the professor of sports medicine and noted orthopedic surgeon, talking about the work he did, the surgeries the knee cartilage replacement surgeries on Lonzo Ball and Gabriel Landeskog. It's Molly and Haw. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Molly. When we come back, Bill O'Brien, the head coach at Boston College, to talk about Ozzie Trapillo, the Bears' new right tackle or left tackle, the Bears' new draft pick. Next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And in case y'all aren't familiar with my game, let me remind you, I am a visionary. I am a revolutionary. I am Seth freaking Rollins. And I am here to tell you that with the 56th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the greatest franchise in the NFL, the Chicago Bears, select Ozzie Trapillo, tackle from Boston College. Let's burn it down and bear down, Chicago.
Welcome back. It's Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today, and that was Seth Rollins introducing and announcing the Bears' second-round draft pick, Ozzie Trapillo from Boston College, the offensive tackle who joins the Bears. Brings us out to the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo. New tires for spring, aturo.com. Bill O'Brien is a football coach at Boston College, knows something about Ozzie Trapillo. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us this morning. So what do the Bears have in their second-round draft pick from Boston College?
They have an incredible person, a very smart guy. He's got his undergraduate degree from Boston College, got his master's in business administration from Boston College. They got a 6'8", 315-pound mountain of a man. You know, he's a really good run blocker, excellent pass protector, very smart, very instinctive, great teammate, was a unanimous captain. Everybody on the team voted for this guy to be captain. So the Bears got a guy that's going to, you know, anchor that position for a long time.
Coach, it's great to talk to you. I think everyone in Chicago is so curious about where Ozzie fits in with the Bears specifically. Obviously, we know he played primarily right tackle at Boston College. The Bears have a really good right tackle right now. Braxton Jones on the left side of the line is coming off an injury. There may be more room for Ozzie to squeeze in there. Where do you see Ozzie playing in the NFL at the pro level, and could he play left tackle?
He definitely is a swing tackle. He played a little bit of left tackle before I got here. We played him at right tackle. We had a left tackle, young guy named Jude Bowery, who will be coming out next year probably. He was a left-handed guy, a little bit more comfortable on the left side. Ozzie's a great teammate. Ozzie said, I'll play right tackle. But Ozzie has played left tackle, so I don't think there's any doubt that he'll be able to you know, do both. I'm not too sure about the Bears depth chart and all that, but I definitely think that Ozzie can play on both sides. He did that in practice a lot, and he did that in games, like I said, before I came to BC.
We're talking with Boston College football coach Bill O'Brien here on Mullay and Haw. So given your experience in the NFL, you know how things evolve and change, and the skill set for left tackle might be different from the right side and vice versa, depending on the offense, depending on the scheme, frankly, depending on the coaching staff. Knowing what you know about what is required of the positions now in today's NFL, where is he better equipped to play, or does it matter?
I think that's a great question. When I was in Houston, we talked about that a lot as the years went by. We felt like both tackles, right and left, you know, had to have tremendous skill sets because, you know, they're both having to block great defensive ends and most teams coming off of both edges. Now, the left tackle obviously has to, you know, protect the blind side of a right-handed quarterback. But, you know, I think that Ozzie, his ability to, you know, get in a right-handed stance, get in a left-handed stance, his experience in playing both in the past, I think will really help him. He can do both. He's very athletic for a guy his size. You know, I compare him to some of the guys that we had, like in New England, Nate Solder, Sebastian Vollmer, very athletic, 6'8" guy that can, you know, pull. He can, like I said, run block. He can pass protect, and I think he can do it on both sides. So I think he's a guy that'll fit in well wherever they decide to start him off at.
Coach, I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, watching a Ben Johnson offense and the creativity that he shows as a coordinator and as a play caller. What are some fun things Ozzie can do? Anything that Bears fans should be excited about? Can Ozzie do any trick plays?
Ozzie's a really good athlete. And, you know, Ben Johnson's done an awesome job at Detroit, and now, you know, being the head coach of the Bears is going to be an exciting offense. You know, Ben's college roommate is our offensive coordinator here at Boston College, Will Lawing. So we watch a lot of Detroit and what Ben does. And, you know, Ozzie's very athletic. He was a basketball player in high school. He can throw. I've seen him throw the football.
Okay, there it is.
Catch the football. so I know he could probably punt. You know, he's an athletic guy. So very athletic for a guy his size, no doubt about it.
So, Coach, you just gave us another connection to the Bears with Ben Johnson's college teammate being on your staff and roommate. And I think you look at Ryan Poles, and his father played on the same Boston College team that Ozzie Trapillo's father was on back in the day. And I think Josh Beekman is in the Boston College administration as well. And there are a lot of connections right there. Given your experience in the NFL, how much does that stuff matter? Because it seems like that gives you familiarity. It gives you some things that maybe you don't have with other prospects. And what role did that play, if any, do you think, in the Bears drafting Ozzie?
I think that's you know, a great point. I think it played a big role. I thought that phone call from Ryan Poles to Ozzie was awesome, you know, where he talked about his dad playing, and, you know, obviously Ryan Poles played here too. And so, you know, I think it's big. You know, we you know, having that connection to the Bears, you know, I spoke to Ryan. I think he came to our Missouri game when we played Missouri back in the fall. And just having the BC connection, I think, is big, because I think, like, when you think about Boston College and the type of players that you're getting in your locker room, I think that's what it is. You don't have a player from BC that you're going to have to, you know, babysit. This is a guy in Ozzie Trapillo that's going to be there early. He's going to stay late. He's going to be a consistent guy every single day. He's going to put a lot of work into it. He's going to fit really well in the Chicago area, that type of guy. You know, you look back to – I loved the Bears when I was growing up. You know, you look back to Jimbo Covert and those guys that they've had in the past. That's the type of guy you're getting in Ozzie. And so I think that that's what NFL teams want. You know, they spend a lot of money on these guys, and they want guys that can come in and they can count on them. They're dependable, they're accountable, they're tough, and that's what Ozzie Trapillo is.
Coach, we know you're busy. We really appreciate you taking a few minutes this morning to talk about one of your players, and hopefully we'll be talking again when he is – a fixture for the Bears for years to come.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Bill O'Brien, the football coach at Boston College, talking about Ozzie Trapillo And
if I wasn't fired up about Ozzie already, now I'm really, he can throw, he can punt, he can catch. Come on now.
You want him to be able to block so he can be on the field so he's able to do all those things with the trick plays and the trickeration.
Right.
But Bill O'Brien sounds like somebody who has experience in the league that has confidence in this prospect. And certainly he coached him, but he didn't recruit him necessarily. So he sounds like the Bears are getting an impressive young man and a pretty capable player.
And he's got the greatest name.
Ozzie. Ozzie's do well in
Chicago
sports. Two
Ozzies I love now in Chicago sports.
She's Ruthie Polinsky. She's in for Mully today. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.